something that's good news for a change. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Yeah, you know, I think people might be getting the impression that we like all this doom, despair, and agony on me, the deep, dark depression, excessive misery, to quote Hee-Haw. But we don't. We really like it when a nice, positive story comes along, and so here we go.
Well, Chuck, even though all of those gloom and doom things actually make for pretty good radio for us, we also are just like everybody else out there. We'd like to see some positive things every once in a while, and this one is very positive. However, I do believe, Charles, that what's going to end up happening is there's going to be a cry and hue from certain segments of the population and certain segments of people in high places of authority who are going to be screaming about activist judges once again. And you know what, Chuck? I know that in times past, folks in the conservative and the liberty movement have also decried the activist role that judges are taking in our culture. You and I have decried the activist role that judges are taking in our culture. But you know what? You have to separate, Charles, between a judge who's basically making it up as they go along and a judge who is following the provisions of the Constitution of the United States.
Oh, well, there's a difference between an activist judge who is changing the fundamentals of the Constitution with his ruling and an activist judge who is restoring the fundamentals of the Constitution with his or her ruling. And the fact is, the case that we're going to be looking at is a restoration of the Constitution, something we don't see very often these days, especially since 9/11/2001. We haven't seen too much restoration of the Constitution, but we're at least taking a baby step backwards rather than going forward as the current president of the United States wants us to do.
Well, that's true. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, what happened, and this happened late last week, we had already gone to press with our programs from last week, so we had to hold this one until today. But late last week, a federal judge did something that, well, honestly, Charles, I wasn't sure that they would do, but they did. And that was that a federal judge ruled to block the contentious provision of an act that you and I had talked about at length on this program called the National Defense Authorization Act. Folks, you remember the NDAA. We've talked about it on this program extensively and how it was basically destroying your security as American citizens by allowing the federal government through the president utilizing the military to declare people in violation without trial and to be able to grab and detain somebody indefinitely as long as they could say that they provided support for terrorist organizations. Well, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Chris Hedges, who some of you may have heard of or may have read or saw on television, decided that that was a fairly chilling prospect to have that hanging out there. The journalist who has had contact because of his wide-ranging reporting with groups that would be considered terrorist organizations, but there were no exemptions for those type of contacts with those organizations. So Mr. Hedges filed a lawsuit, was one of the plaintiffs in the case, and asked the federal courts to strike down that provision as unconstitutional, and that's exactly what federal judge did last week. Basically said that you cannot do domestic policing, seize U.S. citizens, hold them in military facilities, and take away due process. You just can't do it because we have a rule of law. We have the Constitution. And Chuck, as you and I have talked about before about this particular, the NDAA, it just isn't constitutional.
Oh, it's not even close to constitutional, Barry. You know, we've just come off our little foray into testimony at the state level in an attempt to maintain the Constitution. And at the same time, we've got people at the federal level attempting to dismantle it. Well, the NDAA is definitely an attempt to do an end around the Constitution. It is essentially an attempt to, by legislation rather than by the amendment process, to change the how we interpret the, the First, the Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth Amendments, and really the Ninth and the Tenth as well. And those are, let's face it, those are fundamental law of the country. There would be no Constitution of the United States if those amendments had not been placed in there. That was made clear by all the ratifying conventions. They wanted those safeguards to liberty put down in writing rather than being assured that they were implicit in the document. And now we have legislatures trying to bypass them by means of simply legislating them out of existence, which you can't do. And we have judges who are essentially saying whatever the legislatures do is okay by them. Now we have a judge that says, well, now hold on for a minute. Not so fast. And while the finding on this appears to be a First Amendment case, it also is a Fourth Amendment case and a Fifth Amendment case. So applause to the judge who made this decision, from what I can see from this story.
Yeah, and the judge was U.S. District Judge Catherine Forrest, who basically, her ruling was a 68-page opinion, so she basically just fired away at specifically Section 1021 of the NDAA. She basically has just said that, and I'm pulling up a copy of the decision, I believe, so I'm going to be looking at this here just as we talk. But, you know, Chuck, this is just monumental because the NDAA was a bill that was widely adopted by both parties in Congress and in both chambers in Congress to give the president these sweeping extra constitutional authorities, all in the name of preventing terrorism. Now, Chuck, I know that the thought of someone seeking to do us harm on American soil as a foreign agent is chilling to a lot of people. But the point is that it doesn't lead to or even directly lend to the idea that we should give up the protections of the provisions of our Constitution in order to try to create a little temporary security, as Benjamin Franklin is paraphrasing.
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin's, his famous quote, those who would give up precious liberty for a little temporary security deserve neither liberty nor security. And he's correct, because what he is saying is that somehow my personal liberty is dangerous to your safety. Barry, that's an absurdity on its face. The fact is we have a problem in this country with security because we refuse to police our own borders. The fact is that the people who came in and did the 9/11 terrorist act, or act of war, actually, I'm beginning to really dislike the word terrorism. It doesn't really mean anything. Yes, it brings terror. Well, I can assure you that the Japanese who bombed Pearl Harbor brought terror into the hearts of the Americans who were there being bombed and strafed and generally terrorized. But the fact is that was an act of war, and terrorism is simply an act of war. The fact that the 9/11 hijackers weren't specifically working for a certain country. In fact, what they were doing was they were being aided and abetted by people in countries whose own governments refused to punish those people, which in itself is an act of war. But we refuse to act that way because, well, let's face it, there's a reason for that, Barry. And where these guys come from has a lot of something that we need a lot of, and that is oil.
Of course.
So the reason we didn't go to war with those countries is because we need to keep friendly relations to keep the oil flowing.
That's right. Now, Chuck, you know, as I'm looking at this, I found the blog that Chris Hedges himself wrote about this article. He wrote it on Sunday, May the 20th, on a blog site called America Revealed. And this is coming from one of the plaintiffs in the case, Chris Hedges. And he said that basically one of the things that I believe that this is equally important, not only did they overturn Section 1021 of the NDAA by finding it unconstitutional, there were some things that this judge did in response to what the government attorneys were trying to accomplish that I think is equally important, Charles. Hedges reports that she categorically rejected the government's claims that the plaintiffs didn't have standing to bring the case to trial because none of them had been indefinitely detained. In other words, they've not had the act used upon them, so they don't have any standing. See, now that's interesting because that's a tactic that's being used right now, Charles, in order to invalidate the case against the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. That was one of the arguments that government federal government attorneys made before the Supreme Court in relation to that. And let's hope that the U.S. Supremes in the Obamacare decision use the same logic that Judge Catherine Forrest used in this decision against the NDAA. She said that basically lack of imminent enforcement against the plaintiffs did not mean that there was no need for an injunction, and that the NDAA went far beyond what had previously been put in the 2001 Authorization to Use Military Force Act. So the government attorneys came in there to say, oh, well, this is just codifying this previous act, and we don't, since there's no, we're not going to enforce it against them anytime soon, so there's no need for that. Now, the big kicker, though, Chuck, was the judge asked the federal government, the Obama's attorneys, five times to guarantee that the plaintiffs, which were some reporters and some activists, wouldn't be charged under the law for their activities. They refused to answer the judge's question. Five times, yep, the judge asked. The point is, they said, basically, they couldn't. There's nothing under the law that gives any assurance that somebody who's operating in a fashion as a journalist or otherwise, who may have incidental contact, couldn't be grabbed off the street and indefinitely detained in a detention center, including one offshore, because they're suspected of being giving aid to terrorism.
Well, there's a catch-22 here, Barry. Let's say that one of those persons was snatched off the street and hauled off to Guantanamo or offshore someplace. At what point would they be given contact with the court system so they could apply for redress of grievance?
Under NDAA, they wouldn't have to be.
Never.
Never.
That's right.
Never is the answer to that.
That's the whole point. And I think the judge, with this response, recognized that fact. The fact is, these people will never be allowed. If the law is used against them, they will never be allowed to actually bring an action to make sure that they get redress. And she said, nope, you can't do it that way.
That's right. So our hat tip to Chris Hedges, who, as one of the plaintiffs, decided to bring this case. As a journalist, Chuck, he ran some serious risks because, you know, this case was decided last Wednesday. Here, this article of his is Sunday. There was nothing in the major media about this ruling. And this is a major ruling, ladies and gentlemen. But because the Democrats and the Republicans all agreed to it, and it's the Obama administration, it was a non-story that this federal judge had said, this is unconstitutional and can't be enforced.
Well, I'm seeing some indication that the Obama administration is now trying to backtrack away from this thing, claiming that they basically got forced to sign it, to which I say, give me a break. How could you possibly have been forced to sign it? You are the president of the United States. But the fact is that they'd like to distance themselves from this law at this point, because it is an embarrassment. Although, if President Obama is reelected, he will be very happy to have it in his arsenal in order to use it for the political purposes, the rather obvious political purposes that it can be put to use for. So, as usual, we're getting speech out of both sides of mouth on these kinds of things. And frankly, Barry, this is frightening. The fact that the Republicans basically forced it through the House, and that a Democratic president signed it, it really proves once again what we said all along, Barry. That is, it doesn't matter what your party is. It really doesn't matter. Right now, both major parties are enemies of the Constitution.
That's right.
And I don't know how else to put it. Now, I mean, that may have us put in the radical camp. I'm sure that somewhere there's some bureaucrat who is keeping track of what we're saying here on the air. If not directly, then it's not like they can't go to our website, www.principledpolicy.com, and listen to our archives anytime.
Just like all of our listeners can do.
That's right. So we should keep that in mind. But I've heard people actually saying at this point, people who I've known have been in this fight for years, who are now getting to the point where they're too frightened to do anything. They're being frightened out of the fight because they don't want to get hauled off to Guantanamo. Well, Barry, does that scare me? Yes, it does, but not so bad that I'm going to pull out.
No, not at all. I mean, basically, we just have to keep standing up until there's nothing, either nothing left to stand up for or nobody left standing. That's
right.
That's it. That's what we have to do. So at least we got a little bit of a foothold right now, Chuck, because Catherine Forrest, U.S. District Judge, understands that there's only so far you can manipulate the Constitution before you're unconstitutional.
That's right. And we are out of time, which is about perfect timing. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.